Small bodies splashed into the fast-flowing water, most of them not even resurfacing, dragged down by their heavy robes. Doc and Lori abandoned the steering, allowing the heavy raft to find its own direction and speed. All six of them stared behind at the spectacular results of the implogran. On either side of the river, they could see the dangling cord snapped off short, which had held the bridge. But the whole center section had disappeared, floating past them in torn and fragmented sections. Only one of the muties made it to the surface and tried to swim toward the raft. Its clothes were gone, and it resembled the muties they'd seen higher up the Mohawk, short arms and legs, and skin like a reptile. This one had no hair at all on its wrinkled skull, and they were shocked to see a vestigial third eye staring wildly at them in the center of its brutish low forehead. As it floundered along, closing in on the slow-moving raft, its lipless mouth stretched open, and it screamed to them in a feeble voice. Its fingers groped for the rough-hewn edge of the logs near where Lori stood, still trembling from the shock of their brush with death.
I'll help you!
Before anyone else on the raft could move, the slender girl hefted one of the 10-foot-long branches that served as paddles, lifted it, and brought it down on the bobbing face. The stump of wood pulped the man's nose, splitting his lips, breaking off several of his teeth. Blood jetted, flooding his throat, making him choke. His hand slipped off the side of the raft, and he bobbed away, a tendril of crimson trailing from his smashed face. The last they saw of him was a hand clutching at the cold air. Before evening, the Mohawk was joined by another, wider river coming in from the north. Doc Tanner pronounced that it was the Hudson. Even Jack Lauren had heard of that name.
Runs by New York?
Time was it did, my snow-headed young colleague. But what remains of that great metropolis now, I wonder?
When I was a kid, folks talked of it as a hot spot full of weeds. Only ghouls lived there, eating each other.
Sounds much as it was back in my day, Ryan.
The light was fading, and an evening storm threatened. Ryan pointed toward a low spit of land jutting out, with the shattered remnants of a building just visible at its end. Because of its length and narrowness, it would be easy to defend against a sneak attack from the land side. Ryan called out to Jack, who was manning the steering oar with Christy.
Bring us in there if you can.
The farther south they drifted, the slower and wider the river became, with none of the gushing rapids they'd encountered higher up, near the abandoned redoubt. The water was amazingly clear, with the rocks on its bottom looking close enough to reach down and touch, though a quick measurement with a length of cord and JB's technoknife showed them a depth of about 15 feet. Doc kept wondering at how unpolluted the Hudson appeared.
Back when I knew it, nobody would place a hand in the water.
The raft grounded gently on the shingle, and they all leapt gratefully off it, stretching their legs. Jack tied the remnants of the mooring rope around a rusted girder that stuck vertically out of some crumbling concrete. The boy stooped and lapped at water from his cupped hands, wrinkling his nose.
Taste of salt.
Salt? Must be close to the sea, then. I haven't seen the sea for too many long years. Is that right, Doc?
We must go down to the sea again and do business in great waters. The wonders of the Lord, my dear Ryan, is what we might all share one day hence.
But are we close to the sea?
Doc shook his head, the light wind disturbing his gray locks. He smiled, showing his peculiarly fine, strong set of teeth.
What is close, John Barrymore Dix? How when is up? How meretricious is now? Riddle me that, my friend.
They dropped the question of how close they were to the sea. In fact, it was approximately 150 miles from their stopping place to the open ocean beyond Manhattan. Ryan set guards, giving everyone a two-hour duty during the time of darkness, and left the last watch for himself. The rest of the group huddled together in the open, eating from their selfies, using the water from the Hudson for drinking, despite the faint hint of salt it held.
Be better in the trees for shelter.
We haven't seen any sign of life for hours. Not since the crazies on that bridge.
Which was true. The banks of the Hudson seemed deserted. Ryan had been taking regular readings with his rad meter, but it hadn't gone seriously across the orange and into the red. The land was warm, but no longer hot.
Just because we don't see them, doesn't mean they aren't there.
Check.
They stayed where they were. It was a beautiful night, warmer than it had been farther north. The moon was untroubled by clouds, sailing above them, sharpening the edges of all the shadows. Lori was on watch a little after 3 in the morning, and when the Stickies came, they beat the girl to the ground before she could give any warning. Nobody knew a whole lot about Stickies. They were found in small, vicious colonies, generally in parts of the Deathlands, that had been particularly heavily nuked. Some said that the missiles that spawned the genetic horrors that were Stickies also held some secret chromosomic deviator that accounted for the peculiar nightmare that they had become. Some blamed grossly contaminated water supplies in a mysterious process that involved nitrates leached from the soil. All that was truly known about Stickies was that they were triple crazy. They loved killing and ripping things apart. They liked the sight of blood. They also relished fires and explosions, taking some bizarre and perverse pleasure from staring into dancing flames. Oddly, Stickies had only been known in the past 20 or so years. A 350-pound showman named Gert Wolfram was credited with discovering Stickies and putting a pair into his traveling freak show. Word was that Gert hadn't lived too long after that. Stickies had vulpine teeth and staring eyes, eyes that were utterly dead and devoid of emotion, like a basking shark. The main thing about Stickies was that they had developed peculiar sucking pads on their webbed fingers, which enabled them to easily cling like flies to smooth surfaces. It was rumored that Stickies could come at you across the ceiling, but that was generally discounted. But they could surely climb walls and hang onto windows. In the entire Deathlands, Stickies were the only breed of muties that everyone would automatically kill on sight. It was possible to speak to them, but you had to shout and talk very slowly, as though they heard you through a strange kind of lip reading. They had no ears. Lori never heard them or saw them. She was sitting down, coat wrapped around her, slipping from an uneasy wakefulness into a half-sleep. She was recalling the craze days with her father-slash-husband-slash-lover, the Keeper. Quint. White beard to his stomach, stained amber with nicotine. Jacket spotted with sequins. The hooked nose and narrow, cruel mouth. And the violence. In her dream, the girl was tied, naked and spread, to the metal frame of a bed, while Quint moved toward her, leering and dribbling, a polished chrome phallus in his hand, its tip studded with shards of broken glass, smeared with blood. As Lori tried to scream, a hand clamped itself across her mouth. She woke and tried to scream, but it seemed that a hand had been clamped across her mouth, but it was a hand far worse than Quint's. Lori was held down, and the last thing she heard before a crashing blow delivered to the side of her head plunged her into darkness was a soft, bubbling laughter. Ryan had agreed they could build a small fire to hold the night's chill at bay, and it had been its ruby glow that had attracted the Stickies, bringing nearly a dozen of them slinking from the darkness under the looming pine trees. They moved with a sinuous, slithering quiet. It was Christy Roth's special senses that saved the friends from a swift and evil ending. Christy didn't have the true power of doomseeing, but she had highly developed sight and hearing. In her sleep, she caught the noise of the advancing Stickies. Her green eyes flickered open, glancing beyond the glowing remains of their fire. She saw the skulking figures of the Stickies, their eyes blinking, reflecting the flat color of the fire.
Stickies, wake up!
She reached for her blaster and ripped off a couple of shots at the nearest of the muties, who were barely 20 paces from where she'd been sleeping. Ryan, JV, and Jack all came awake, guns magically in their hands. Doc Tanner took a while longer to reach the surface. Like many such firefights, it lasted less than 15 seconds. Many muties had different body structures from norms, more primitive and brutish. They were consequently more difficult to put down and keep down. Stickies were among the hardest of all to chill. Christy took out the first two, her 9mm bullets punching holes clean through flesh and muscle at such close range. The Stickies kicked over in a scrabbling, screaming tangle, their fall obstructing their following companions. Christy's next two rounds missed. Then she hit a third mutie with two bullets, both in the belly, folding him over, vomiting blood. Jack took out two more Stickies with his magnum, the huge hand blaster coughing in the darkness, spitting fire and death. One of the two was up immediately, even though its left arm had been nearly severed at the shoulder by the big 357 round. The creature lurched on, eyes wide, its blood crimsoning its chest and legs. Jack took careful aim and put another bullet in the middle of its face. JB held the minis in chattering death, smearing the five stickies on the left of the attacking bunch, raking the barrel of the mean little gun backward and forward, using up the whole mag to make double sure they were well chilled. Ryan Carter was left with three of the stickies for himself. Awakened by Christie's yell of warning, his hands went by automatic reflex to the rectangular shape of the Heckler & Koch G-12. He rolled on one side, kicking away the single blanket that had been his only protection against the night. Ryan gave each of his targets a single burst of three shots. The tallest of them, suckered hands stretched out to grasp at the human prey, was hit in the groin. The next mutie had its hands in front of it, blinding it. As it stumbled, the bullet stitched across its chest, and the sticky fell. The last sticky seemed oblivious to the massacre of its fellows and still came on, mouth open in a silent scream. Unfortunately, Doc Tanner, who was just becoming aware of the attack, staggered to his knees and called out to Laurie, distracting the mutie at the crucial millisecond that Ryan squeezed the trigger. The creature turned in mid-stride, launching itself at the old man, suckered fingers reaching greedily for his throat. The strength of a sticky's grip was notorious. Ryan had personally seen a man pull a sticky's hand off a friend's face, bringing half the cheek with it. The trio of bullets missed the sticky's body, barely clipping the top of its legs, punching the creature off balance. The snarling beauty fell, only a hand span from Doc Tanner. Though not normally a great fighting man, Doc calmly drew the rapier blade from his sword stick and thrust it into the sticky's open mouth. The angle was perfect, the steel penetrating a foot and a half down its throat. Doc twisted his wrist like a master of the duel, opening the inside of his enemy's neck. Blood spurted between the bare teeth, splattering across the pebbles. The sticky reached convulsively for Doc, its fingers failing to find a grip on the blood-slicked steel. Move! Jack leveled his pistol, waiting until the old man had withdrawn his sword and scrabbled out of the way. Then he put a booming bullet through the back of the dying mutie's skull.
That all of them?
I counted 12 in, and I counted 12 down.
Doc wiped the blade of his sword stick on the rags of the nearest of the stickies, then sheathed it once more. Stooping, he picked up his faded hat and jammed it on his head.
Where's Laurie?
Christie pointed along the narrow peninsula toward the looming forest.
Over there.
Showing an unsuspected burst of speed, the old man darted like a disjointed crab to where they could now see the motionless figure of the young girl. The others followed, Ryan and the armorer taking a few moments to check that all of the dozen attackers were truly dead. With stickies, you could never be too careful.
Oh, my sweetest little darling!
Doc bent and cradled the girl in his arms.
My sweet dove of innocence!
Having seen the way Laurie Quint had ruthlessly